Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning in to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sociologic here at CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. I'm Rebecca, and I'm going to be your host for the next hour up until 8 p.m., and I'm joined as what's now become a weekly routine.
I just hang around.
DJ Coco.
Hello, everyone. I'm from Slumber Party, aka 2 minutes ago.
Exactly 2 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't have to do my what's made you happy in the past week, just myself in the studio. So I had to do it with someone. Do you want to start this week or shall I start?
You start.
I
Rebecca,
start.
Yes.
Okay, I'll start. So this week, I'm trying to think like what I actually did this week. I was like, what brought me joy? Because there's one thing that I'm definitely really excited about, but it caused me, I'd say, for most of the week, stress.
Oh no.
And like just constant uncertainty, because I applied for a role at my university back home to be the station manager of the campus radio there. And I had my interview for it last Monday, so I spent the whole week being like, I need to know now. I need to know now the results.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got the results yesterday and I succeeded.
She got it.
I got it. So it was like that. It like brought me so much joy after so much stress.
No, you
and like
deserve it.
Anxiety
yes.
about it. But I think like if we took a look at something else, I went to Kitsilano Beach on Saturday evening by myself with my book, bought myself some rolled ice cream, sat and read.
Oh, that sounds like a perfect
It was
experience.
So nice. Even though it was cloudy, it was so nice because it was a nice temperature. I watched people play frisbee, volleyball, and I was just reading my book. I was just like, loving it.
That sounds amazing. Amazing.
Very peaceful, very zen. But what about you, DJ Coco?
For me, speaking about volleyball, I have recently picked up volleyball and I've been going to do pickup games at my community center.
Ooh.
So I've been doing a lot of volleyball practice, and yesterday I did 2 hours at my local park of just hitting it against the wall, and it was good. The sun was shining. I was hitting the
nice.
Ball. My dog was sitting there, and it felt like just a great night. So I was very
yeah.
happy for that.
Damn, that sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. I really want to get back into doing more like sports and exercise, but I do think that it's going to wait until I get home.
Because, no, why wait? Why wait?
Well, because I have a whole justification for this.
Okay, let's hear.
The fact that essentially in about a month, my time at the station pretty much comes to an end, which
no.
is very sad. And then I'm still in Canada for about another 2 weeks after that. So Sociologic will still be going for another 2 weeks. It's just I'll kind of be finishing up being at the station 4 days a week and doing intravenous. But I then am traveling around with my friend who's coming over to visit, which I'm super excited about. But 2 weeks of that to then flying home to then obviously is like seeing everyone pretty much as soon as you land, because everyone's like, oh my God, you're back. I want to mm-hmm. know what your year's been like
yeah.
and this, that, the other. So it's like seeing everyone. And then I'm going to probably be moving up to uni within like 2-3 weeks of flying home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy
so
cow.
For me, it's like too many different, too many things are changing.
Yeah, yeah. Those are all stacked right on top of
yeah.
each other.
Yeah, and like when my friend comes. So at the moment, I'm living with my roommate. She leaves at the end of June. And when my friend is over visiting, I think we're hopping like 3 different Airbnbs while she's here. So I'm like, I'm not going to be in the same place to consistently, I don't know, go to the gym or
right,
go to
right.
the swimming pool or something. Because
it's just movement.
It's just constantly moving. So my justification is, when I settle in back home at university,
okay, you
in the
destined.
Summer, I will start getting back into like exercise.
Justified. Absolutely, yeah. Justified.
Justification.
Question. Mm-hmm. What will happen to Sociologic when you are gone?
Sociologic is going to crumble and...
No.
No. There's kind of a little surprise. So obviously, for those of you that have been listening for, well, maybe since the start, but definitely probably before this month and so, I had a co-host called Kaylin. I love Kaylin. Kaylin went back to the States because she finished her semester here and was not doing a summer semester. And so she went back to the States. So she has not been on episodes recently. But in prep of this, because we knew this, we recorded a very last episode together before she left.
Surprise
so
episode.
There's going to be one last episode that will air. Which is quite funny because it will air when I'm in the UK. Like, it airs the day I land in the UK.
Oh, geez.
And that will air as the last episode. I can't even remember really what we spoke about on that episode.
It'll be a surprise to you.
It's a surprise for me.
You too, yeah. And me.
Yeah, so that will be the last episode of Sociologic. And then I believe Sociologic will be done. I don't know if you'll hear it on the airwaves as like repeats of episodes at all, or if it will just be done folded neatly away on the website for anyone that wants to listen to the archived audio. But
maybe the next chapter of your life. So
yeah, it will be done and folded up nice and neatly. But I don't know, we don't know what the future holds of what I will be doing back in the UK, now part of my my own university's radio. So who knows if my voice will still be heard over in Canada.
Interesting.
We will see. But yes, unfortunately Sociologic will not be continuing once I leave.
So listen in carefully.
Listen in carefully, yes. Yes, make the most of the live voice, yes. The live British voice before she leaves. But yeah, speaking of that, today's topic, I have a bit more music to play, but honestly, I really overprepped in the song selection, so we'll see how we go. I do not expect to get through it all. But I have a topic today that I was thinking a lot about in social media activism and kind of what change do we really see through social media activism? How effective is it? How do we measure that? How do we define that? What examples are there? Because I feel like for our generation, social media activism seems to be just normal activism to us. Like, you look at all the hashtags and the trends that were happening in lockdown, and like hashtag Me Too movement, hashtag Black Lives Matter, things like that. They're all very like well known, and I don't know, I was kind of just intrigued by the concept of social media activism to leading to real world change, because it's very different from, say, the suffragette movement. So very polarizing kind of forms of it. So I'm going to talk a bit about how people have said it does, how people have said it doesn't, look at some examples, pose some questions, because I don't think I even have an answer to it myself, to be honest. I'm just kind of thought today's episode would be talking through my thought process and the research I've done around it, because it's been a little interesting, I'll say, nugget of information in my brain that's kind of been eating away at me. But yes, we have got a bunch of music to play as well to break it up, because it's not so much, I'd say, a very in-depth topic. It's very much more lighthearted than last week's episode and the week before that, which was female serial killers. If you do want to go listen to that, it is uploaded at cgsf.ca in the Sociologic playlist. I personally think they're very interesting, but it's not everyone's cup of tea, which I fully understand. So yes, to start us off, I played a song last week that was in German, and it was called 99 Red Balloons by the German artist Nina. Now, I want to play the English version of it today, because I really like that song. It's been on repeat for me, and I've only listened to the English version until last week when I thought, nah, let's play the German version.
Now you listen to the colonizer version.
Oh, God, no. No, I'll never escape the colonizer remarks. But no, the German version is really good. Definitely will listen to the original German. But I just thought, because I love the song, I didn't want to play it exactly the same again. So we're going to play the English version of it. And then I'll be back to talk about this topic. DJ Coco will not.
No.
DJ Coco will abandon ship.
I will be listening, though, so I'll be among the sea of listeners.
The sea of listeners. Yes. Oh, my God. I feel like it's more of a puddle, maybe, but...
A little puddle.
But thanks. Anyway, I appreciate everyone that does tune in and listen to my ramblings in my sociologic way. But yes, here is 99 Red Balloons by Nina.
You and I in a little toy shop, buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got, set them free at the break of dawn.
Six days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner.
The women in our communities deserve to feel safe from both emotional and physical abuse. They deserve men who control their anger. Most importantly, they deserve to know the people they love most will never hurt them. Men like me stand up to create a safer world for the women in our lives, and we're looking to men like you, the men who make up our communities, to join us. You can play an active part to end violence. Visit www.whiteribbon.ca.
Thank you.
too fast. Don't wanna think about it, got no regrets. You wanna do it unmasked, and I'm just so glad you asked. Cause I've been tired of posing shy in my mind. Tell you that I'm fine, you know I'm lying. Really, I've been tired to tell you.
Sociologic, where I'm going to be your host for the next 45 minutes, roughly. And that song you just heard was called Unmasked by Halves off of the album Art of Floating, which I found from the CGSF playlist. And I really like that song. It makes me kind of feel like I'm floating on a different plane, which is kind of works really well with the album name Art of Floating. And then just a reminder that the first song that we heard was 99 Red Balloons by the German artist Nina. So getting into today's kind of topic might just be me trying to figure out my own thought process with you on the other end. Maybe it gets you thinking about your thought processes as well and how you get involved in activism on social media and things like that. But I thought to start with like a good overview would be looking kind of at the rough points where people and experts have argued that it does enact real world change and that it is very effective, and looking at the people that say not so much, it's not very effective or not effective at all, and or there's a flip side to it that no one really listens to. So for the side of it does, one, I think, very obvious thing that comes to mind is that many movements were able to gain a lot of traction due to social media that they wouldn't have been able to have achieved without it. So you look at the big ones being the hashtag Black Lives Matter, so hashtag BLM, hashtag Me Too. There's pro-Ukraine movements, pro-Palestine movements, a lot of movements fighting for LGBTQ plus rights. All of them have some form of hashtag or some form of symbol, which can very easily be put into posts, put into captions and shared around, which builds a lot of traction for these movements. Another thing for why it is very effective in real world change is that it gives a voice to a lot of people who may not have been able to speak up or have a platform to address significant social conversations to them. And along that line, you also get to hear directly from communities that are impacted and not just the corporations that are kind of like the front image. You're getting to actually hear directly from people who are impacted by these issues. And social media can also amplify those voices. Like the outreach it has could reach places where you would never typically hear about it. It can mobilize a whole bunch of communities. It eliminates the geographical barriers. And a very clear example of that is the Arab Spring uprisings from 2010 to 2012, where it was happening in a bunch of different Arab areas, and social media allowed them to all have this collective unity and evade state-operated media channels, because they would be using Facebook and things to organize protests and awareness. So actually what was seen was social media usage actually doubled in all the Arab countries during the protests, with the exception of Libya. And specifically for Egypt and Tunisia, Facebook actually played a key role through this poll usage in organizing protests and spreading awareness. So you can see social media activism having a very clear and significant role in actually spreading awareness, but also amplifying the voices for those issues. But on the flip side, it can be argued that social media activism is not as effective as it comes across in actually leading to real world change. So a lot of people can say that it leads to a very performative type of activism, which is slacktivism, and that there's this social pressure of maintaining this curated social media presence. And as like Kaylin and I have spoken on previous episodes about social media and about doom scrolling and about things like that, that there's this idea that we need to have this perfect self on social media that has to be flawless, and we have to upkeep that, and it's not a true reflection. This can be seen through performative activism on social media. Also, there is an increasing issue with social media in general in spreading misinformation, because a lot of people get their news from social media, but it's not necessarily from media-approved sites, media organizations and things like that. So that can lead to a lot of misinformation getting around and a lot of reactionary activism. And people that promote that can then not realize that they're promoting something that hasn't been fact-checked. They then can remain uneducated on the issues that they are promoting and sharing and trying to build awareness around incorrectly. And then that just spreads it even further. And the final thing of what people argue is how social media activism isn't the most effective way of leading to real world change. Not that it's completely ineffective, is that there is a corporate capitalist interest that shapes what gets promoted. So with social media and like cookies and data, we know that algorithms can amplify certain topics being seen. There's also censorship controlling what people can say online and what people can consume. So for example, in Canada, news platforms can't be on, I'm not sure if it's all social media, but I know for a fact they can't be on Instagram and things. So I think that I'm not sure fully the logistics and the things behind that, but like, for example, that censorship controlling what people are seeing on social media and things like that. So these are kind of like the different sides of what I was kind of toying with when I was researching about how does social media activism actually be effective in real world change. And one question I did think about was like, is social media activism too performative? And this idea of performative activism is defined as when a person's support for social justice is just to increase one's social capital rather than because of one's devotion to a cause. And that real allyship and activism requires taking on some risk and being in solidarity with those who are facing injustice, not just sharing a post or liking a post or commenting underneath it and things like that. So it's kind of this idea that instead of helping the cause being promoted, you're actually, the motivation behind it is to promote personal views and to make yourself look better and make your image more socially acceptable. And it's an interesting thing to think about, because you're not always going to know everyone's intentions behind why they share posts or why they comment on posts and things like that, it makes it really difficult to distinguish genuine advocacy from a performative promotion of social justice movements. Because in a way, sharing it and spreading awareness and educating, that is a form of activism that is effective in leading real world change. You're spreading the issue. But I think where it gets lost in translation, because social media is an amazing tool to utilize to amplify these important causes and marginalized voices, and it's such a significant tool and aspect of contemporary society. The problem is where that these efforts are being translated into tangible action or change, but then what does tangible action and change look like? Could look a lot different for different people, for different societies. And one example that I kept thinking back to was back in 2020, when it was lockdown happening and COVID, but there was also the hashtag Black Lives Matter and the Black Lives Matter movement really increasing in traction and awareness due to the murder of George Floyd. And it was drawing attention to systemic racism and police brutality, especially in the US, with other stories like Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, Michael Brown. And social media made these victims all a symbol of explicit systemic racism and police brutality, both in the US and abroad. And it became a very pivotal movement. And with that was the hashtag Blackout Tuesday and a black square. And now I think about that was such a big thing in 2020, but I've not seen anything really about it now. And it seemed that it was almost like a trend, and it was very quickly wiped off the internet. And hashtag Blackout Tuesday was a day that was promoted by activists to mourn and bring change because of the death of George Floyd. And so you saw a lot of people putting black squares on their stories. There was black squares being just posted in like Instagram feeds and things like that. But apart from that, apart from just clogging up channels of information and updates and just seeing black squares everywhere, what actually came from that is what I was asking myself, because maybe that something did come from it and I just haven't found that out or seen that. But for me, I don't know of any kind of significant tangible action that happened from people posting black squares on their social media. But on the flip side, you could say it was a really big tool in collective unity and support and awareness and bringing the conversation to the forefront of people's minds over police brutality and systemic racism reaching levels it shouldn't be reaching. I don't know. But there was a blog I was reading of a person saying that for most people, social media is now just about subtweeting, retweeting, reposting, and it's a very dangerous and perplexing space to navigate. And they spoke about how the black square kind of trend of 2020 was a perfect example for this, because instead of giving platforms to black creators to amplify their voices, influencers with huge platforms actually simplified it with a black square on their stories to display their solidarity and support. So it almost, the person that wrote this blog made it seem that it was almost, they simplified and demeaned the movement, because instead of getting people to voice their experiences, voice the issue, you just saw black squares everywhere. And that's all anyone can focus on is the black squares that they were seeing. So there is this like phenomenon